Hey everyone, thanks so much for joining me on the Slice of Construction podcast. I'm your host, Jared Taylor. Joining me today is the managing partner of Prudence, Gavin Myers. Gavin, how are you today?
I'm great, Jared. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
I'm excited to have you on. I got to tell you, I saw you in my LinkedIn feed and went on the website and I felt a your website's awesome. Like it's very calming. It's got that like darker background. Big fan of dark backgrounds. And then I started digging into some of your portfolio companies. You have some great companies that you've invested in, but I'm like, I have to have Gavin on. So let's start off by you telling the audience a little bit about yourself and then we'll talk more about Prudence.
Sure. Yeah. Happy to kind of give you my background. Maybe I'll just kind of wind the clock back to right out of college. I've been working in the technology industry for most of my career. I graduated college in 1999 and at the time moved out to the Bay Area and worked for Frank Quattrone at what was called at the time the CSFB Technology Group. And we were working with early stage companies, helping them raise capital and eventually go public. In those times, it was a very different market then. You didn't have a lot of late stage and growth equity financing. And so companies would raise a Series A, Series B, and get to 25 to 30 million of revenue and go public. So for us as investment bankers wanting to take these companies public, we were meeting with them right around the Series A stage. So it's interesting when you kind of fast forward to the present, working predominantly with this kind of, we call it Series A plus or minus. I've been working with early stage companies my entire career. But what was really important about that experience was that we worked with companies right at the tail end of the dot-com bubble during the burst. And then there was that kind of phase of that which was left. Because however tough people found this tech recession over the past 18 months, it paled in comparison to the dot-com bubble bursting. It was a truly disaster. However, in that time frame, there were fantastic companies that had differentiated defensible capabilities with customers willing to pay them, with cost structures that were sustainable and market opportunities that were, you know, at the time, you think of like a Google, for instance, was one of the companies we worked with, near limitless by comparison to where they were. And so that was just one of those early formative experiences that led me to take a hard look at the kind of investor I wanted to be and decide early on that matching my personality with what I experienced meant fewer investments, more concentrated ownership, higher conviction, higher quality companies, differentiated defensible capabilities. And so our goal is to create a portfolio now, fast forward to the present, of just great businesses, businesses that leverage technology and have great capabilities. But you know, that was something that I learned early on, and I'm very grateful that I had that experience.
What do you look for in these investments that you're making? I know it's probably never a one size fits all, but I know you really kind of focus in on that real estate, like construction space, right? Has been part of your core focus. I guess first question, why is that an area of interest to you? And then in those particular spaces, right? This is for this episode, we'll focus probably more on construction. You know, what do these construction companies have to show you to get you really interested? What's kind of sparking that first level of interest?
Sure. Yeah, so our journey to the built world and specifically construction, was not direct. I mean, we don't come from the sector. We weren't real estate operators or real estate investors. We were just technology investors. And we happened to see over the years opportunities that involved real estate technology, well before this sector was even called prop tech or the words built world or contech ever became part of our lexicon. But we were investors in like Spotify and Uber and even a crypto company called blockchain.com, but we were also early investors in Compass. And that helped us just get this front row seat into what was happening in the residential sector, from which just this is how Prudence operates. We get into a sector and we start looking at all the tangential areas. And for residential, that was not only how you buy and sell, but how you finance and how you manage and operate the real estate that you've recently acquired. And so just over time that spawned, I think from a first principles basis, just a fascination with this sector. It was known, widely known, that there was a few sectors where technology was going to be slow to propagate through those sectors. And really, those two were healthcare and real estate. And they happen to be two of the largest global contributors to GDP. So the question was always when and why and in what form would technology start to propagate through these ecosystems. And we were seeing it. I mean, I think a big reason that we got excited was there was just this the right demographic change happening. You know, people in their 30s and 40s were buying homes for the first time. They weren't using the same realtors that their parents used. They were looking for capabilities that matched other capabilities they had in other aspects of their life. These are digitally native people looking for digital tools. We also saw that on the construction side, as well as the commercial real estate side, where people were in their, again, 30s and 40s, ascending to levels of seniority, looking to do more with less and not able to push the boundaries of what one can achieve with people and processes. So looking for software, looking for automation, and quite frankly, getting a lot of positive feedback from their companies if they're able to source, identify, roll out, and show the benefit of using technology to do something better, faster, and cheaper. So it just was kind of the right time. Now, there's a lot of external forces that made this also the right time. You know, so a lot of people like to point to COVID. I think things were changing well before COVID. But, you know, I think, you know, it's also just one of those things that once it starts, it doesn't reverse. And so what we saw was a fairly wide open landscape of opportunity for better capabilities. But really what we thought, you needed to approach this from a first principles technology perspective. And then, you know, build that local market knowledge. And so that's the approach we took. There's a lot of different ways that people have become prop tech investors, but that's the way we have decided to be a prop tech investor. And it's worked out well for us. I think we're really proud of our portfolio and our companies. And I don't have the current stat, but when you look at the kind of growth in the companies that we've invested in post our investment, you know, I think the last time we checked, it was, you know, like over like 1,000% on average across our portfolio. So there's just real material growth that happens post-investment. I think that's just a sign of a very attractive market opportunity.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I went through your portfolio, what was available online, and you have some great companies in there. And, you know, it's no secret. Then you look at the founders and you have some great founders in there. It's crazy how that aligns, right? I've been super, my background was healthcare, and I've been super fascinated in this, you know, contech space as of late, for a lot of the same reasons that kind of you laid out when you were talking about real estate and construction. It's really cool for this space to be able to walk down the street and see, like, you're in it. You have all the buildings, you have all this new construction happening, and then there's just so many companies in the space, and I think so much room for innovation, maybe even more than some of the other industries out there. And for me, it's been kind of interesting to see how they actually compare pretty well for to healthcare, like both still heavily regulated industries, maybe slower moving than other spaces. But I actually like those spaces a lot. I think there's the most opportunity there. And then what you're seeing with AI right now, like, let's talk a little bit about, you know, what excites you, particularly with construction and AI's capability for drastically improving the construction space?
Sure. Yeah. There's enormous opportunities, and it's like, I'll say there's a broader need for leveraging data more efficiently, whether that's to create more commonality of data, more actionable data, or more, this is not really a word, but more trainable data in the case of AI. We've made recently, actually about 6 months ago, an investment. We led the Series A for a company called AI Clearing. AI Clearing is able to ingest the imagery that comes out of drones that are flown over large infrastructure construction sites and can then map that data back to the original construction plans, timelines, and provisions to tell you precisely whether what has been built correctly, and if the project is on plan. So it's managing both to give you real-time KPIs on progress and quality, which is something you just have never had before, particularly over an infrastructure site, which is defined by a large surface area. So kind of the bigger the surface area, the more data you have to collect, the more data you have to process, and the more important it is to be able to do something autonomously, because you pushed the boundaries of what human beings can do. Even looking at drone imagery, the way that they were handling it, a lot of general contracting firms, was they were sending it out to firms to do post-processing. And that post-processing could take days or weeks and would be subject to kind of human error. And so here it all happens without human intervention. And so they've been adopted by kind of four of the top 20 general contractors. They've grown quickly. They, of course, have great unit economics. But more importantly than all of that is, like, they've actually built their own technology. This is their own proprietary capabilities that they've developed over the last 4 years. You know, for a Series A stage company, they've got 55 people in product and engineering. And the reason, by the way, that they can have so many people is because they're based in Eastern Europe. It's a Polish company based in Warsaw, which Warsaw is a hotbed of AI engineers coming out of the University of Warsaw. And so they're able to get great people, provide a great opportunity, and it's just a lower cost than trying to build the same business in San Francisco or New York.
And still having that same, you know, level of quality engineer, right? Because as you said,
arguably you could say it's higher, right? Because they're being thrust into the mix. There's a different degree of gratitude for having a backed, exciting technology company in a place like Poland versus, you know, maybe that's more of a dime a dozen in the Bay Area. So there's an intense loyalty at the company. They're really excited. There's a lot of passion behind it. I think you actually mentioned this before we started about just being able to see the true passion in the eyes of the founders that you talk to. Boy, I mean, the passion here is palpable. And it needs to be, because it's not like these businesses are not easy to build. No business is easy to build, but particularly one that's serving the needs of, you know, the global, you know, the top 100 global construction firms. These are companies with billions and tens of billions, sorry, in the case of the largest ones, tens of billions of revenue on very important, enormous sites. I mean, one of their largest end markets is actually utility scale solar. So the amount of solar that's getting installed in the ground, I think this year, the amount of solar, I'm going to have my numbers a little bit off, but I think the amount of solar that's getting installed this year will like double the installed capacity. And so like the rate of growth is just incredible in the sector. And they're at the forefront of that, which is, you know, why do you need autonomous tracking? Because if you have 5 square miles, you could have a million different components ready to be put in the ground or being put in the ground at any one point in time. And again, human beings can't track that. Pictures can't tell you exactly what's happened, where it's happened. Is it in the right place, or has something been installed incorrectly? And you can just have that real-time feedback that's so important for these important infrastructure sites.
It sounds like a really cool company, and I'm glad you mentioned the passion thing. I know sometimes it sounds silly, but I swear, like, and you would say every founder, right? A lot of people will say every founder is passionate. They're not, though. You can, like, you see, it's that, like, that light in their eyes when they talk about it, that it's like, no matter how hard times get or anything, right, they're going to make it work. They're going to get it done. Outside of that, right, when we talk construction, what other areas is Prudence, like, in construction interested in? Maybe you haven't made a move yet, but it's an area that you're like, we're heavily looking into this, and why?
Well, it depends when this airs. I can talk about another one we're deeply involved with. There's a lot of unmet needs in the construction space. Specifically, the construction tech stack has significant gaps. And this is a persistent reality across residential, commercial, and construction, is the evolving tech stack that the large enterprises operate with. And it's also the interoperability and capabilities of that tech stack. Which is, you know, onboard a new application, the ability for that application to talk to other applications is not as robust. And that, by the way, is a perspective that we've been able to build as not construction or real estate people by our nature, but technology people first and foremost. We know what tech stacks look like in other sectors that are years ahead in technology adoption, and we see these gaps. And so there's a certain degree of just awareness. I wouldn't even call it pattern recognition. It's just awareness of what needs to exist so that you can continue to in an era where there's a lot of dollars going in to develop new applications, adopt those applications, but have the kind of interoperability that you need to have the full benefit of those applications be realized. And that is, that's a big area of focus for ours. And that's, it's not something we kind of bump up against a lot of the prop tech firms and we're evaluating. We see a lot more kind of generalists kind of looking at these problems.
Are there any particular areas in kind of contact that you would maybe stay away from right now? Nothing against the particular area per se, but you're like just cautious about it and maybe want to see some more movement before you take more interest in it? Or are you really open to kind of all areas right now?
There are certain areas we've spent time on and haven't quite gotten there. 3D printing of homes, super interesting. I mean, it's so fascinating. We've gone pretty deep. Because there's a lot of reasons to believe that there's very significant portions of a home build that are commoditized, non-differentiated, and that like every home has to have. And, there's increasingly, less quote unquote, it's not my term, but unskilled labor, right? That's not the skilled labor part is for more the, once the carpentry and the framing and then everything else happens after that. Some of the foundational work is considered in our industry unskilled labor. Again, not my term, but there's reasons to think that 3D printed foundations make a ton of sense, right? And so we've gone pretty deep in there. I mean, this isn't necessarily construction tech, but we've looked at other applications for just maintenance that are roboticized, that are really interesting, like window washing. That you like the idea, but once you kind of get into the unit economics and the adoption, the regulations, there's a variety of reasons. And it just could be the capital raise history, the people involved, looking into people's eyes and deciding, are they the kind of people you want to back or not? There's a lot of reasons you could pass. It might have nothing to do with the sector, or it might just be you like the people, but the sector is just not quite where it needs to be. So we've steered away from anything that's a little bit too physical in its nature. Again, we're not real estate investors, we're technology investors. We tend to avoid hardware. There's a lot of people have done very well in hardware, but I think you just have to stay, for us, it's not an area of expertise. And we've looked at a lot of hardware applications and we're kind of interested, but we have to be honest with ourselves about what are the limitations of our own knowledge and capabilities and experience that we can bring to an investment. And we've had to honestly conclude that we're not the best investors for those types of businesses at times. So that's like the short answer. But the longer answer is probably it was mentioned in there, which is really we are technology investors, and there's just this temptation in the prop tech sector to get kind of more involved with the physical asset itself. And there's a lot of funds that have raised prop codes. And that's, again, people have to kind of do what they're comfortable with, and that's fine, but that's not what we're comfortable with. We're not asset investors, we're software investors, and we have to stay with what we're really capable of doing to make sure that we take care of our investors' capital.
As we head into Q2, Gavin, coming up shortly, what's really exciting you the most? What can you share with us in terms of what's next for Prudence?
Yeah, I mean, I think when answering this question, a lot of people talk about new investments, but there's always existing portfolio companies and how they're doing. This is a really interesting time. It's, throughout my career, I've seen, I think, the computing platform changes, right? Going from, static computers to connected computers, going from connected computers to wireless wireless and smartphone devices, to go from on-prem computing to cloud computing. And now being able to have giant supercomputers in the sky processing software that incorporates pre-trained data to give you the intelligence that a human being otherwise would have, but probably better, faster, and cheaper. This artificial intelligence era is we're so fortunate to be investing during this time. And it's not just about, in this case, the existing companies and the new companies and what they can build. But we have a company, actually, I think I'm wearing this jacket. I always wear this jacket. It's always on the back of my chair. That's why I'm wearing it, called Crexie. And Crexie operates one of the largest commercial real estate listings platforms. You know, they have something like, I think between for sale and lease listings, somewhere like 500,000 properties listed for sale or lease on their platform at any given time, you know, kind of over about $1 trillion of value. That's their own site. There's no MLS, multiple listing service, in commercial. It's literally Crexy and then this other company called LoopNet. So basically two companies that have the kind of data that they have, which creates this opportunity to ingest not only company data, so the assets being sold, third-party data, but also their own proprietary data that nobody else has or will likely ever have. It's hard to build a listing. So it's one of the hardest things. It's like why Crexy is such an interesting company. It's really, really hard to do. And so they're able to kind of triangulate with these three sources of data to create novel applications, which other people won't be able to create. And it's something we're very focused on as a company. So I'm excited because there's this, we've been investing behind vertical SaaS for the past 10 years, but now we're starting to move to what we call autonomous vertical SaaS, which is what are these unique data capabilities that you have by virtue of mapping workflows for the past 10 years, that data that you have that's not in the public domain that you can use to inform decisioning so that you can create the kind of intelligence that a human being would have, but offer it broadly to anybody who uses your products and services. That's unbelievable. I mean, that is so exciting. So we feel very lucky to be able to do what we do right now at this point in time. And it's, I could walk you through, you know, I walked you through the Crexy application, just how you get a mortgage. I don't know if you've ever broken down the process of getting a mortgage, but what happens behind the scenes that you don't see is a massively human capital intensive process of physical files being passed around to different functional parts of the underwriting process. And again, this is something that one of our other portfolio companies, Maxwell, has mapped. They've digitized that whole process. The next step is, how do we take these novel data capabilities that we have? We've seen how these steps perform and start to automate them. And the net result of all of this will be drastically reduced prices, drastically improved throughput. And so, you know, we have a lot of things that we're excited about within our portfolio. And then, of course, there's a lot of things that we're excited about outside of our portfolio.
I love it, Gavin. And I'm really excited to stay in touch with you to hear more about your portfolio companies and updates, and also maybe get you on some additional episodes where we can dive even deeper.
Would love to. Anytime.
Thanks so much.